Vishnu Sahasranama, name 897, Sanat. Parashrabhata explains this name to mean Tesham Sambhajanat Sanat, which is translated as saying that he, Vishnu, confers perfect enjoyment on all the liberated souls equally. All the souls who cross over the world of birth and death by the Archirardhi Marga and come to Vaikuntha, they are given equal opportunity for perfect enjoyment. Now, in the Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding, yes, okay. Everyone has an equal opportunity for perfect enjoyment, and everyone in the spiritual world thinks that what I am doing is perfect for me. The cow feels perfectly satisfied as a cow, the grass is perfectly satisfied as grass, the tree is perfectly satisfied as a tree, the gopis are perfectly satisfied as gopis, but there are different levels of their enjoyment. This is a very deep subject. I won't get into it more just now. Krishna Datta Bharadvaj, another commentator, takes the root sun to mean dana, to give, to worship, and gives the definition sanoti dadati swadarshanam bhaktibhya iti sanat. He who gives his darshan, he shows himself to his devotees, is sanat. Here's a very nice quote from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text 5. The word sun is also used in the sense of charity. Therefore, when everything is given up in charity unto the Lord reciprocates by giving himself unto the devotee. Satyadeva Vashishta interprets the name Sanat as meaning Shashvat, Nitya, permanent, eternal. The Amarakosh Sanskrit dictionary gives the word Sana as an indeclinable meaning perpetually, ever, and gives the definition Sana Nitya. The common word Sanatana comes up as the next name in the Vishnu Sahasranama, similarly meaning eternal, and is derived from the word Sana. So Satyadeva Vashishta, based on this, gives the description. Sanat Nitya Avikaraha Ekarasaha Ityartha. Sanat is a name for Vishnu, which means he who is eternal, immutable, and always of the same beautiful form. Satyadeva Vashishta gives references from the Shruti to support this. From the Rig Veda 2.16.1, Sanat Yuvanam Ase Havamahe. Again from the Rig Veda, Sana Deva Sahase Jata Ugraha. And again from the Rig Veda, Ayo Maha Shura Sanat Anildah. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives his understanding. Sanam Taddattam Rasa Gandhadi Ati Iti Sanat. He who eats, ati means eats, the offering, sana, that which is given, of taste, fragrance, and so on, made by the devotees. And we can see here that one of the meanings given by Apte for the word sun is to receive graciously. So he, Vishnu, gladly accepts offerings from his devotees. Shankaracharya gives the meaning ancient or of long duration to the word sanat. Sanat iti nipata chirarta vachanaha, which indicates a great length of time. One of the manifestations of Bhagavan is as time. Shankara quotes Vishnu Purana in support. Parasya brahmano rupam purusha pratamam dvija vyakta vyakte tathayavanye rupe kalastatha param. The first form of the Param Brahma is Purusha, the next two are Vyakta and Avyakta, another is time. So he who is in the form of time. There was a previous name here in Vishnu Sahasranam, Kala, and I didn't discuss the phenomenon or the concept of time there in great detail because it is a major discussion. And I was reluctant to get into it because if we get into the philosophical and scientific speculations about time, it becomes extremely complex. Rasaraj Prabhu of Bhaktivedanta Institute in Berkeley and Mumbai told me that once he was speaking to one of these big, big scientists deeply in the world of theoretical physics, in a world that we ordinary mortals can hardly understand. And so Rasaraj once asked him, what is time? And the scientist just thought for some time and then said, I don't know. It's mysterious. What do we mean, actually, by time? Well, here are a few sayings about time. Love and time are the only two things in all the world and all of life that cannot be bought, but only spent. Here's a saying probably from the internet, which was restructured by my godbrother, Maheshwar Prabhu. How to stop time? Kiss. How to travel in time? Read. How to escape time? Music. How to feel time? Write. How to save time? Plan. How to waste time? Facebook. How to do time? Steal. How to have a good time? Chant Hare Krishna. What is time? Time is a manifestation of Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we know from Bhagavad Gita. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kalosmi Lokakshay. Say it again. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kalosmi Lokakshayakrit Pravridho. Lokan samahartum iha pravrittaha vitepi tvam na bhavishyanti sarve yevastita pratyanikeshu yodhaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come here to destroy all people, with the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. We find in the Bhagavatam, third canto, that Vidura says that eternal time is another form of the Supreme Lord. Again in the third canto, in a purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, by exhibiting his potencies, the Supreme Personality of Godhead adjusts all these different elements, keeping himself within as the super soul and without as time. Now, this is part of a complex discussion within the Bhagavatam. You have to read it to get the context. if I already have several sessions of talks on this subject of time lined up, but it's really only touching the surface. So if you want to see what Vidura, if you want to see what is the context of this quote in relation to the Supreme Lord and the manifestation of the cosmos, then please see Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, 18, and the preceding and following verses. Here is a quote from Kunti Devi's prayers. Manye Tvam Kalam Ishanam Anadi Nidhanam Vibhum Samang Charantam Sarvatra Bhutanang Yanmita Kalihi. My Lord, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada, building on the understanding that Krishna is time, discusses karma, freedom, devotees, how they use their time, suffering, destiny, so many things Srila Prabhupada touches on. I'll read the purport. Kunti Devi knew that Krishna was neither her nephew nor an ordinary family member of her paternal house. She knew perfectly well that Krishna is the primeval Lord who lives in everyone's heart as the Supersoul Paramatma. Another name of the Paramatma feature of the Lord is Kala or eternal time. I'll get into later discussion of secular philosophical speculations regarding time, but the Shastric understanding of time, which we're looking at now, is also not easy to understand. The Paramatma is time. Continuing reading. Eternal time is the witness of all our actions, good and bad, and thus resultant reactions are destined by Him. It is no use saying that we do not know why and for what we are suffering. We may forget the misdeed for which we may suffer at this present moment, but we must remember that Paramatma is our constant companion, and therefore He knows everything, past, present, and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, He is the supreme controller also. Without His sanction, not a blade of grass can move. The living beings are given as much freedom as they deserve, and misuse of that freedom is the cause of suffering. The devotees of the Lord do not misuse their freedom, and therefore they are the good sons of the Lord. Others who misuse freedom are put into miseries destined by the eternal Kala. The Kala offers the conditioned souls both happiness and miseries. It is all predestined by eternal time. As we have miseries without calling for them, so we have happiness also without asking for it, because it is all predestined by Kala. No one is therefore either an enemy or a friend of the Lord. Everyone is suffering and enjoying the result of his own destiny. The destiny is made by the living beings in course of social intercourse. Everyone here wants to lord it over the material nature. And thus everyone creates his own destiny under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. He is all-pervading, and therefore he can see everyone's activities. And because the Lord has no beginning or end, he is also known as the eternal time, Kala. There's so much in that purport. So much. To analyze it and try to understand it, unpack it, would be a big, big job. And again, I request devotees to go back, read it, contemplate on it, and try to understand it. And Krishna, according to our level of sincerity, will give us realizations about the very deep topics covered in this purport. Krishna is time. He is without beginning and without end. Time is also without beginning and without end. Well, there are scientific doubts about that in some quarters. But anyway, we accept that he is time, beginningless and endless. He was, is, and ever shall be, changeless, immutable. Time cannot act on him. Time cannot condition him. He is beyond the very concept of time. The concept of time is a manifestation of himself, and he is meditated and worshipped by all pious beings from time immemorial. What is time? Krishna. How do the secular students of philosophy and science approach this? Or just anyone for that matter? Leaving out religion. Well, we don't have to leave out Krishna. Why should we leave out Krishna? But just trying to look at it from the topic of time, from what we might say an everyday, day-to-day perspective, and then go a little deeper into what the scientists and philosophers say. In a day-to-day perspective, everyone knows what time is. When you say, what is time? Well, time is... No, you say, what time? But then if you think about it, even if you ask, like, just like Rasaraj Prabhu asked that big scientist, what is time? It's hard to define and understand. It's mysterious. We'll get into that, you know, unfold a little bit how it is mysterious without getting into the deep philosophical and scientific discussions, which are very technical and really for specialists. In science and philosophy and religion and maybe day-to-day usage, there are different concepts of what is time or different definitions. In day-to-day usage, what we call time is pretty much understood. And the system of measuring it is pretty consistent. We have clocks with seconds, minutes, and hours. It's a convention that we have seconds and minutes and hours, which become days and weeks and months and years. Although there could be different, it could be measured in different units, and there have been different units in history. The modern international basic unit of time is the second, is defined by the electronic transition of the cesium atom. Go and look that up if you want. Cesium atom. We are reminded, and we'll get back to that later, about the Srimad Bhagavatam also calculates time from the movements of atoms. Okay, all right, so what is the time? What is the time? What is the time? Look at my watch. It's 7:52:14. Now it's 15, now 16, now 70 seconds. What is time? Everyone knows it's a universal aspect of human experience. We all experience time. We talk about saving time, wasting time, killing time, marking time, spending time. We talk about keeping time, losing time, time out, time down, behind the times, in the nick of time. It's so familiar, the concept of time. It's the most common noun in all documents on the internet's web pages. But at the same time, even though if you ask what is time, it's not exactly the same thing as saying what is the time. Anyone with a watch can tell you what is the time. But even it's a universal feature of everyone's life, but it's something which, if we start to think about it, we have a hard time. It's mysterious. We can hardly know it. Philosophers have grappled with the topic of what time is for centuries. Augustine, the philosopher, previous to Descartes, Augustine was known as the philosopher in the Western world. He was so highly regarded. He covered so many topics, including Augustine also grappled with the problem of time. He wrote, of course this is in translation, Augustine wrote, "If anyone asks a person what time is, he knows what they mean. But if asked to specifically define it, then he realizes that what he thought he knew about time turns out to be extremely puzzling, and that what he thought time to be, he realizes that it is not. What then is time? I know well enough what it is, provided that nobody asks me. But if I am asked what it is and try to explain, I am baffled." This is Augustine, a great philosopher. "All the same, I can confidently say that I know that if nothing passed, there would be no past time. If nothing were going to happen, then there would be no future time. And if nothing were, there would be no present time. Of these three divisions of time, past, present, and future, how can two, the past and the future, be or exist when the past no longer is and the future is yet to come? As for the present, if it were always present and never moved on to become the past, it would not be time but eternity. If therefore the present is time, only by reason of the fact that it moves on to become the past, how can we say that even the present exists when the reason why it is that it is not to be?" Baffling. Scientific definition. Physicists. What do physicists say what time is? Well, they have very different ideas, but most basically, they all agree that the time is the progression of events from the past to the present into the future. Okay, that's very simple. That is time. If a system is unchanging, it is timeless. But is there anything? Is there anything that is absolutely unchanging? We can say some things are timeless. 2 + 2 = 4. Of course, you can philosophically ask, what do you mean by 2? And it is a valid philosophical question. Anyway, we won't get into that. Time is sometimes considered the fourth dimension of reality, which is required to experience and describe everything in three-dimensional space, events in three-dimensional space. It's not something that we can directly see. We certainly can't touch it. We can't taste it or smell it. But we can measure its passage, or at least try to. There is the arrow of time, what is called the arrow of time. Time is always moving forward. That's another big question. Why should it be like that? It's one of the biggest unresolved questions in science. You can take an egg, break it, and make an omelet. But you can't un-omelet an omelet and make it into an egg. You can ring a bell, but you can't unring it. Once it's rung, it's done. Is it possible to make the arrow of time go backwards? That is a big question in physics, because physics, especially among all the sciences, physics works on mathematics. And physicists tend to believe that the mathematical formulae that they formulate to describe phenomena in this world, if these mathematical formulae make sense, they correspond at some level to something which is observable, then it must represent truth or reality. When we come to time and events happening in time, physicists find that if they convert their formulae into negative equations with negative integers, it works just as well. So we can use mathematical formulae to map the arrow of time going forward, but the equations work if you have them going backwards. So theoretically, according to physics, you should be able to go backwards in time. Stephen Hawking, in his Brief History of Time, has postulated something like that, that we're big banging now and we'll big implode later and time will come backwards on us. It's a speculation. But in our practical experience, you can't unring a bell. What we call the future, if it's mappable into equations, then it's something that we can understand. But then the equations, if they make sense in their own framework, but they don't correspond to common sense, we could say. Well, common sense doesn't always work in science, so we're told. In quantum theory especially. But there are certain problems, philosophical problems, or just practical problems, with thinking that we could make time go backwards. For instance, if you could travel backwards in time and you were able to kill your grandfather, then kill your grandfather before he'd given birth to your father, then you wouldn't be able to be born at the time you were born. The grandfather paradox. So these we'll get into gradually, so many different philosophical this is and that's. Getting back to time as more simple understanding of time as something that we read on timepieces. Timepieces, yeah. And if I look at a timepiece now, it says 8:03:16. That's in the evening. If I go, I'm now in India on the date, Wednesday, the 5th of April, 2023. It's got it. The date is assigned differently in different calendars. We have, in India, we have so many calendars. Probably every language area has its own calendar. We also have our Gaurya Vaishnava, Gaurabda. We have Krishnabda. Muslims use a calendar based on when Hazrat Muhammad, peace be upon him, entered Makkah. So it's arbitrary what we say the time or what the date is and what the time is. It's adjusted for the movements of the sun so that now I'm in India and the time is just after 8 o'clock. But if I go west to Pakistan, the correct time will not be the same as the correct time here. And then as we move through different time zones, there'll be different times. These are conventional agreements of time, of where time zones are placed. And it's based on a conventional agreement on how to define the second and the minute and the hour. It's also a convention that clocks are designed to count up to higher numbers, whereas in the egg timer, we can see the time by how we start off with a full quantity in the upper compartment. It's full, and as time goes on, the top compartment gets less and less sand in it. It's convention again. Time zones. We change our timepiece by 1 hour or whatever when we cross the time zone. 24 hours in a day. It could be 10 hours in a day. We could have 100 seconds in a minute. But it's because of the nature of time that we can assign times. If time weren't going on, we wouldn't be able to assign times. Another thing is, we can place non-simultaneous events. In our mind, we can understand non-simultaneous events into a linear sequence according to their times of occurrence. Just like if we study history. Say we study the history of India, and we can talk about various events. The Jallianwala Bagh massacre was one event. The salt march to Dindi in Gujarat was in what's now called Gujarat was another event. The gaining of political independence of India from Britain was another event. the ascension of Pandit Nehru to the post of Prime Minister was another event. Now, these are different events in time, and it's not that they follow one after the other. There are so many other things going on in between them. But if we say in a history quiz, you're given these events and you're told to put them in order, you can put them in order, and there is a correct order. And that, according to space, there can be different space. I'm talking about here, about talking about spatiality within India at the same time that India gained independence from Britain. There were so many things going on all over the country. It's not that everyone even knew about it, because communications in those days were much primitive, you could say, in comparison to what they are now. There's a book called Freedom at Midnight. Just can't remember the names of the authors. Some French authors. They describe about the great, briefly, but enough to make a book. They describe about the struggle for India's independence, how it's eventually got, and then how in one village somewhere in India, one man was, the morning after independence was gained, was given at midnight, and which day is that? 26th January, or is that Republic Day? Okay. 26th January, 1947. So at midnight, so the next day, man was out plowing his fields, and his neighbor sees him and says, "Hey, what are you doing working in the field? Why aren't you celebrating independence?" He said, "What? Celebrating what? Independence? What do you mean? The British, they're no longer ruling us. British? What's the British?" So many people may not even have known. So the point I'm making here is that time and space are two factors of reality as we perceive it, which combine, and they can be to help us to understand, put things in order, to define different events. Time is required to understand events. Events means something happens, things happen in time. If something doesn't change, it can't be called an event. Another feature of time is that we can measure how long an event lasts. We can say that the Mughal Empire in India lasted so many years. British domination over India. It's not, of course, you can't say an exact moment when the Mughal Empire began or ended, or the British domination began or ended, but we can give a time span. We know that the British weren't in India 2,000 years ago, nor were the Mughals for that matter. So we can see how long, we can make the timing. A soccer game, professional soccer game, 90 minutes, it's a fixed time. There may be a little extra stoppage time. So time, we take it for granted, but despite centuries of philosophers trying to understand what is time, of course, in the Western world, people think that philosophy began a little over 2,000 years ago, although it's been going on for a much longer time in other civilizations, but our Western people are loath to accept that there were other civilizations. But even though so much time has been put into investigating the nature of time, there's still so many issues which are unresolved and which philosophers and scientists have different opinions about, beginning with what time actually is, whether time exists at all, or is it just something in the human mind? If we say that time is measured by movement and change, then in a hypothetical situation where there's no movement or change, would time cease to exist? Is time travel possible? If so, which kind of time travel? How time is related to the mind, and we'll get through to that, the experience of time within the mind. Why time has a fixed arrow? Are the future and the past as real as the present? We live in the present. Is the past real? Is the future real? Whether future time will be infinite or whether everything will just come to an end. The Big Bang. Was there time before the Big Bang? What is it in our brain that experiences time? Is there a timeless substratum from which time as we know it emerges? These are just some of the questions, and the delving into them can be very deep. Here's just one question. What are the basic ontological differences between the present, the past, and the future? There are different theories. There are those philosophers who are called presentists. They argue that only the present is really real, and our consciousness of the present is vivid, but the past and the future are not really real. Whatever happened in the past is gone. Whatever is in the future doesn't exist. That's what the presentists say. There's also a theory called the growing past, that the past and the present are both real. Something happened, so many things really happened, but the future is not real because whatever happened in the past is fixed. It happened like that, in the way that it did. So it's fixed, it's a fixed reality, but the future is indeterminate. So we can't say that the future is real in the same way that the past and the present are real. And then again, what is the present? Because as soon as you try to pinpoint it's the present, it's already in the past. And then comes the question that it's just like, does a dot exist? As soon as you try to define a point, it's an object. It's not a point. If you try to define the present, by the time you stop and think about it, it's already gone. Another theory called eternalism is that the differences between the present, the past, and the future are just subjective. And there are other theories. And traditionally, philosophers have addressed questions as, is time actually a feature of reality? And then again, you have to define what reality is. And that's a hard one, isn't it? Or is time merely an aspect of our experience? Does it make any sense to think of time as having had a beginning? Whether time flows continuously or is made up of packages of moments. Whether it's possible to travel through time. Here's a few fairly recent books by very intelligent people, no doubt. I'm just giving the names of the books. One book is called The New Theory of Time, which is edited by L. Nathan Oaklander and Quentin Smith, published by Yale in 1994. Martin Heidegger, one of the most notable philosophers of the 20th century, wrote a book called The History of the Concept of Time. He wrote in German. It was translated by Theodor Kissiel and published Indiana, 1992. Michael Tooley, Time, Tense, and Causation, Oxford, in the year 2000. That's another big topic of time and how it's represented in languages. Very, very big topic, huge topic within linguistics and the philosophy of language. Another book published in the year 2000 by Harvard, David Z. Albert, Time and Chance. Then Theodore Sider wrote a book, Four-Dimensionalism, An Ontology of Persistence and Time, Oxford, 2001. Then another, L. Nathan Oaklander, Temporal Relations and Temporal Becoming, published by the University Press of America? Don't know. 1984. And Michael Friedman, Foundations of Space-Time Theories, published by Princeton in 1986. Is existence, as I'm just throwing out some ideas of how many ideas there are about time, and I'll get back to the Shastric understanding of what is time. But is existence, what is existence? Is it bound by time, or is time a feature of existence? There's definitely, among various philosophers and scientists, no single, clearly obvious definition of time. It's not something that we can definitely experience. We can't cut it. If we think about the strange effects of time, and Einstein with his space-time and time warp, and there are time warps, idea of time warps, so many strange effects of time, which we'll get into, plus the fact that time wears us down, and eventually time will definitely cause us to die. There's no proof of that, but there is inference. Man is mortal, Socrates is mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. Man is mortal, but it's not fully proved, because every man who is now presently alive hasn't yet died. These are the kind of things which make philosophers into philosophers. Mysterious time. In A Brief History of Time, Stephen Hawking's proposes that the concept of time has no meaning before the beginning of the universe. He presumes that there's a beginning of the universe. So in this way, he presumes that time is intricately related with the universe. Very simply, in Vedic understanding, we know from Bhagavad Gita, it's not directly in Bhagavad Gita, but it's analyzed by Baladev Vidyabhushan in his study of Bhagavad Gita, that time is one of the five tattvas, or realities, basic realities of existence, which are the five subjects of the Bhagavad Gita. Kala, timer. The others are Ishvara, the supreme controller, God, Jiva, the conscious living being, Prakriti, material nature, and Karma, material activity, or activity in general. Krishna willing, at another time, we'll discuss this further. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha dante nidaya chunakang padiyoni patya kritva chakakushatam etadaham bravimi hai sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad guranga chandra charne kurutana parivadatu jano yata tata va Nanu mukaro navayang vicharayamaha hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama natama nirvishama Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna,